Well, good afternoon. I think, as is clear, I'm not Joe Bourne. This is Michael McGrobbie, and in my spare time, I'm the IU president. About a year ago, I did a jazz program with Joe and my friend David Baker. And around that time, I was asked if I'd like to do a show on rock and roll as well. And in a moment of weakness, I agreed. And today's the day I have to do that. I should add, for those who question this, that I'm also going to do a classical show where I will play my famous favorite pieces of Mozart, Mahler, and Messiaen there. But today, it's rock and roll. And in thinking about a playlist for this show, I realize that, and since this is meant to be my personal selections, I realize that when it came to rock music, the situation was very much like what it was with me for jazz. And with jazz, I really like anything that happened after Miles Davis's Kind of Blue. And to me, the quintessential track that started modern jazz, and I don't claim to be a scholar here, this is personal taste, but the quintessential track was Miles Davis's So What on Kind of Blue. And I got thinking to what was the quintessential track in rock music that really heralded the birth of the new from what had gone before. And I have to say, and I'll probably alienate half the people who are listening to this, that I am not a great fan of Elvis Presley or any of his epigones. And for me, my interest in popular music started with the Beatles. So the other thing I want to do is to play only pieces of music that are live, to show that all the great bands and great performers of that era, and that era is any number of bands who were and performers who were in their heyday in the 60s and early 70s, but no bands formed after that. The Beatles, to me, were the first group who really started that new world. And as I said, all of this music is live. And the Beatles actually didn't do a very large amount of live recording, partly because most of their concerts were drowned out by screaming later on and their amps weren't loud enough. But early on, they did a lot of shows on the BBC in the early to mid-60s. And there's a wonderful collection, 2-CD collection, of much of what they did, the best of what they did for the BBC in the early 60s. And I have chosen as the first track what was their first hit. And so in some ways, this is the rock equivalent, at least for me, that So What was in jazz. So the first track is the first hit the Beatles ever had, Love Me Do.
Love me do. Whoa. Love me do. Oh, love me do. Yeah, love me do. Oh, love me do. Yeah, love me do. Oh, oh, love me do.
Well, as I said, that was the first single the Beatles ever had in the British charts. And you can sort of tell listening to that there was something different to what had gone before. There was a feel of authenticity and freshness about it that I think much of the music that had gone before it simply didn't have. Now, I have to confess my own tastes run to later Beatles, the Beatles of Sgt. Pepper and Revolver, rather than the earlier Beatles, but that track and the LP it came off played I think, an historic role in the evolution and the reinvigoration of popular music. Well, there was a great explosion of bands in Britain at that time, I think stimulated by the level of popularity of the Beatles, dozens of famous names, obviously the Rolling Stones, the Yardbirds, more on them later, the Kinks, the Animals, Manfred Mann, the list goes on and on. But in many of those groups during that time recorded and released what I think you can call sort of pretty love songs. But in 1965, a group released a single that was different in character to most of the pretty love songs which most of the other groups were releasing at that time. And this was a song that told of intergenerational turmoil and strife, and that group, of course, is The Who, and the track is My Generation. Now, I was tempted to play the version from what's regarded as one of the greatest live recordings ever, The Who's Live at Leeds, but it's very long and it's extremely heavy, and I thought I'd choose something that was a kind of a moderate version of this song, which is the version of My Generation that they did at the Monterey Pop Festival in 1967, and I'll say just a little bit more about that later. So this is the classic Who lineup: Pete Townshend and Roger Daltrey on vocals, John Entwistle, the late John Entwistle on bass, and the late Keith Moon on drums. We'll be right back. Well, that was The Who with one of their most famous tracks, My Generation, and you probably heard some superlative bass guitar playing by John Entwistle in that, who, among a number of nicknames he had, one was Thunderfingers, and you probably picked that up in the bass playing on that track. As I said, the Live at Lee's version is even longer and more powerful, but that was done at the Monterey Pop Festival in 1967, June of 1967, which was probably the first great pop festival in terms of the international attention that it got, and because also it spawned some the futures and the careers of some major acts as well. Well, around that time, the Rolling Stones, who had been mainly releasing pretty love songs as well, they stopped writing pretty love songs, and I think it was around the time that Satisfaction came out, and they started to release a series of classic albums that I think started to demonstrate their power and their reputation. I've chosen, by the way, these are two groups, both of whom have headlined at the Super Bowl too, which is an interesting comment on how respectable they've now become. But what I've chosen for a Rolling Stones piece is Jumping Jack Flash. I think when you talk about the Rolling Stones, that's almost emblematic of them. It's from, again, a very highly regarded live recording, Get Your Yayas Out. And this is, to me, the great Rolling Stones lineup, the one that had Mick Taylor. I think, with all due respect to Ronnie Wood, I think the Rolling Stones were at their very best when Mick Taylor was a member of the group after Brian Jones's death as well. So from Get Your Yayas Out, this is Jumping Jack Flash.
He seems to be ready. Are you ready?
For the next band.
We're sorry for the delay. Is everybody ready?
Well, I've done the biggest band in all sorts of other places in America. The biggest band in New York. The first band for 3 years. The Rolling Stones. The Rolling Stones.
The greatest rock and roll band in the world. The Rolling Stones. The Rolling Stones.
Oh,
very famous Stones track, Jumpin' Jack Flash, from Get Your Yayas Out, which was recorded in a number of days over late in 1969 at Madison Square Gardens as well. I must say, I think it's one of the great ironies that after Janet Jackson's famous wardrobe malfunction, that the Rolling Stones were brought in the next year to bring a note of respectability back to the Super Bowl halftime entertainment. Well, I mentioned before great groups who had emerged around the time the Beatles were really pioneering the renaissance in popular music. And one of those were the Yardbirds. One of these groups was the Yardbirds, who were formed in 1961, actually. And a young guitarist named Eric Clapton joined them in 1962. And Clapton was with them for a period and then went to join John Mayall's Blues Breakers, who I saw a version of John Mayall's groups twice, actually, when I was at university. And they were really quite outstanding. But Clapton's talent, I think, was recognized by all. And a year later, in 1966, he somewhat modestly formed a group containing, as he famously put it, the cream of rock musicians. And this became the group called Cream. Just three men, himself on guitar, Jack Bruce on bass, and Ginger Baker on drums. And they released a series of absolutely classic albums. And interestingly, if people have seen the covers of those original albums, are still reproduced in CD to this day, especially of Disraeli Gears and Wheels of Fire, the artist who drew those is an Australian, a man called Martin Sharp, and he moved to England about 66. And the story goes that he was at a pub and he went and knew a girl who was talking to a couple of fellows and went and joined them. And one of these fellows was a musician, and he said he had a song that he'd just composed, and he was looking for some lyrics for it. And Martin Sharp said he just composed a poem, and he wrote it out on the back of a beer coaster and gave it to the musician. And the musician was Eric Clapton, and the song was Tales of Brave Ulysses. And this turned into, I think it was the B-side of a single that the Cream released in 66. And there is a wonderful live version on the two-volume live Cream CD release as well. And I should also say I feel a special affinity to this because Martin Sharp was close friends with a colleague who of mine later at university. I was out in Australia for a period, so I heard the inside story about what those days were like in what was then swinging London. So this is Tales of Brave Ulysses.
Winter would bring you down forever, but you rode upon a steamer to the violence of the sun. At the colors of the sea, blind your eyes, the trembling mermaid, and you touch the distant beaches with tales of brave Ulysses. Always naked, ears were tortured by the sirens sweetly singing. Sparkling waves are calling you to touch a white lace bed. You see your gold brown body dancing through the turquoise, and the footprints make you follow where the sky loves. Your finger,
You wanna take her with you to the heartland of the winter. You wanna take her with you to the heartland of the winter.
Well, that was Cream's Tales of Brave Ulysses. That was composed by Martin Sharp and Eric Clapton, written by Martin Sharp and Eric Clapton. And I particularly wanted to play that because people have heard the probably heard the recorded versions of that, and I wondered whether Clapton could actually play the wah-wah guitar like that, and that proves that he could. And there's also a wonderful recording on the same CD of White Room, which is another wah-wah classic as well, that I also highly recommend. Well, I mentioned before the legendary Monterey Pop Festival held in Monterey, California in 1967, which maybe for the first time, certainly at the level of international attention that it got, it mixed the very best British bands and performers with the very best American bands and performers, and actually was called the International Festival, and that was because there were people there like Ravi Shankar, did a magnificent piece on sitar, and Hugh Masekela, the South African trumpeter, as well. And it was, as I said, probably the first major rock festival to gain international acclaim. And there were many famous people who performed there. And before Monterey, some claimed maybe that a white woman couldn't sing the blues. But after Monterey, no one could ever claim that again. So from the Monterey Pop Festival, Janis Joplin and Big Brother and the Holding Company, Ball and Chain.
Thank you. looking out at the rain. Sitting down by my window, just looking out at the rain. Some came along on the ground to hold on me, and it fell like a ball and chain.
Oh! just looking out at the rain. Sitting down by my window, just looking out. Some came along, honey grabbed a hold of her, and it felt like a ball and chain. Well, I'm gonna give you puppets the last time, yeah! And I said, oh, whoa, whoa, oh, honey, oh, this can't be, well, on this can't be.
Well, that's from Janis Joplin's fabulous performance at the Monterey International Pop Festival, Ball and Chain, and there is a great documentary of the Monterey Pop Festival that actually has that track and some others she sang in it, and there's a wonderful shot during that when the camera pans to Mama Cass Elliott of the Mamas and the Papas, and she's mouthing the words something like, wow, that's heavy, and which it certainly was, but I think... it's rare that the blues has been sung as well as that in rock music. It really is quite extraordinary. She was one of the great talents of rock music whose life was cut tragically short in 1970. I'll be back in just a few moments.
This is WFIU Bloomington, public radio from Indiana University, broadcasting at 103.7 and on translators W264 AL Columbus at 100.7. W269BU French Lick West Baden at 101.7, W255BG Greensburg at 98.9, W291AM Kokomo at 106.1, and from W236AE Terre Haute at 95.1.
Well, equally tragic was the loss of the following year in 1971 of Jim Morrison. He, of course, was the lead singer for The Doors, now I think a really iconic figure. And The Doors were founded in L.A. In that extraordinarily creative period of the mid to early 60s, in 1965 in particular. And there's some very good live Doors recordings. And what I've chosen here is a track called Soul Kitchen, which was originally on The Doors' first release, the first album. And it's from the collection of performances through 69 and early 70 called The Doors Absolutely Live. And I should comment here that that the Doors movie, which I'm sure maybe some people have seen, that has Val Kilmer playing Jim Morrison, really is quite a superb movie, and I hope that we may be able to show this in our new cinema when that opens later this year as well. It rivals some of the other great characterizations in movies like George C. Scott as Patton, Val Kilmer as Jim Morrison is quite remarkable. And, of course, The Doors were Morrison and Ray Manzarek on keyboards, Robbie Krieger on guitar, and John Densmore on drums. So from The Doors Absolutely Live, Soul Kitchen.
Thank you. where the clock said it time to close. Now I guess we better go now, but I'd really like to stay here all night. The cars go past, all stuffed with eyes. Street lights shed their hollow glow. Your brain seems bruised with numb surprise. Still one place to go. Still one place to go. Let me sleep all night in your soul kitchen. Warm my mind to your gentle snow. Tell me how, why the pain, bumping in the neon. Red fingers, we quick, been on red. Speaking secret alphabets. I light another cigarette. Left you forget. Left you forget. Left you forget. Left you forget. Your fingers weave quick minarets, speaking secret alphabets. I light another cigarette. Learn to forget. Learn to forget. Learn to forget. Learn to forget.
Let me leave all night.
The cop said it's time to close now. I know I have to go now. Really?
Well, another legendary American band formed in the same year as The Doors, but formed in San Francisco, was Jefferson Airplane. And the two bands were actually very friendly, and they played some famous gigs together in Europe in 1968. In fact, Morrison and Grace Slick were allegedly lovers. They were sort of, I suppose, the Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie of 60s rock music. But I mentioned before the Monterey Pop Festival, which was maybe the first really famous rock festival ever held. Even more famous, of course, was Woodstock, and we celebrated the 40th anniversary of that famous festival last year. And there were many, many acts that became famous through Woodstock, Joe Cocker, Santana, 10 years after, and others as well. Jefferson Airplane were already famous when they played at Woodstock, and but on the both of the recordings and in the movie of Woodstock, the documentary of Woodstock, there was only a small amount of their material. Recently, though, Sony has started releasing the complete sets of a number of the Woodstock bands, and as well as the complete set of that Jefferson Airplane played at Woodstock, they also have released the complete sets of Santana, Johnny Winter, Sly and the Family Stone, and Janis Joplin. But here I'm focusing on Jefferson Airplane's wonderful performance at Woodstock. They were the first performance of the day. I think they performed as the sun was coming up at dawn. And I've chosen the last track, one of their longer and somewhat apocalyptic tracks. It was from their 1968 album, Crown of Creation. And so from Jefferson Airplane's Woodstock performance, The House at Peniel Corner, which was written by Paul Kantner and Marty Balin.
Take it, man. ceiling, but nobody's feeling it. Somebody's stealing, somebody's stealing it. You say you don't see and you don't. You say you won't know and you won't let it go.
Those are almost cooling. The dodos are.
Well, that's Jefferson Airplane's The House at Peniel Corner, as I said, written by Paul Kantner and Marty Balin. And this was from the classic lineup too of Jefferson Airplane, and that was the great Grace Slick on vocals there. And I chose that in particular because I think it really demonstrates very well her vocal pyrotechnics, especially live, where it proves that she can do it just as well live as she could on record. And also there's some wonderful guitar playing from Jorma Kekkonen. There's another track on that, Eskimo Blue Day, a live version that features his guitar playing, his famous weeping guitar style, even better. But I chose that one, I think, because Grace Slick is probably the person who one most associates with Jefferson Airplane. Grace Slick's still alive and now an artist and doing very well as an artist. And the rest of that lineup, that classic lineup, included Jack Cassidy on bass, also a very highly regarded bass player, normally included in the top 10 best bass players ever, etc. Spencer Dryden on drums, and Nicky Hopkins, of course, famous for playing with the Rolling Stones on their mid-period as well, completed that particular lineup. Well, another legendary performance at Woodstock was Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, and this was only their second gig, and they made some exceptional albums together, Deja Vu being probably the most iconic, and they made a great live recording, Four-Way Street, one half acoustic, one half electric, and this was recorded in various venues across the US in 1970, and all the band members had reasonably successful to greater or lesser degree solo careers. Neil Young in particular, extremely successful career, and he had released about that time two other albums, Everybody Knows This Is Nowhere and After the Gold Rush, one in the first in 69, the second in 70. And on Four-Way Street there is an acoustic version by Young of one of the songs I think he's maybe best known for, and it's electric on the album, but the acoustic version I think is even better and really really quite beautiful. And I'm dedicating this to my wife Laurie, who's outside listening to this, and it's Cowgirl in the Sand. So Neil Young from Four-Way Street.
So many love you, is it the same? it's not the way it seems. Purple words on a gray background. To be a woman and to be turned down. Old enough now to change your It's the woman in you that makes you want to play this game.
Well, that was Neil Young's Beautiful Cowgirl in the Sand from Everybody Knows This Is Nowhere, and a bit of a change in pace and tempo from what I played before. But getting back to the previous pace and tempo, the UK also had their Woodstock, and that was the Isle of Wight Festival in 1970. This is known by some as Britain's Woodstock. And this was the last major concert that Jimi Hendrix did, but before he played was another great British 60s band, and that was Jethro Tull. Now, I'm playing Jethro Tull partly because I also saw them twice again when they were in their heyday. This is the great lineup, obviously headed by Ian Anderson on flute and vocals, but with Martin Barr on guitar, Clive Bunker on drums, Glenn Cornick on bass, and John Evans on keyboards. This is the classic Tull lineup, in my view. And this is from a CD of their performance at the Isle of Wight concert, a great CD too for anybody who's a Tull fan, and it's called Jethro Tull, Nothing Is Easy, and this track happens to be Nothing Is Easy.
Hey, we'll do one more for you. This is called Nothing Is Easy. Thanks for coming. Hope you had a good time. We'll see you next year, maybe. Huh? See you again. Friend, it's okay. I'll take your life easy, stumble and hurry, be happy my way. When tension starts mounting, you've lost part of the pennies you have made. I'll try hard and see while I'm not worrying me, and that's all my tales. Nothing's easy.
won't turn out so bad.
Well, most of these tracks represent great groups and artists at their absolute peaks. But, of course, rock music had its dark side too. The deaths of Hendrix and Morrison and Joplin and others were all drug-related. And no group probably captured the dark side of everything or anything better than another great British 60s group. And that was also formed in the magic year of 1965, and that was Pink Floyd. And I've chosen a track from later in their career, and this is from The Wall, but it was from a tour they did in 1994, the Division Bell tour, to promote that particular CD when it came out, that album when it came out. This was not the classic lineup, the classic lineup being Dave Gilmour on guitar and Nick Mason drums and Rick Wright, the late Rick Wright, on keyboards and Roger Waters, because they'd had a terrible falling out with Waters, and it was the other three and various other session musicians. But the track is Comfortably Numb, which was written by Gilmour and Roger Waters. And I've chosen this because it has an extraordinary guitar solo in it by Dave Gilmour, who I think is one of the very finest musicians here. And it's from the Pulse, the CD of that tour called Pulse, which also has a full live recording of Dark Side of the Moon too, which I highly recommend to anybody who's a Pink Floyd fan but hasn't heard it. So from Pulse, Comfortably Numb.
Come on now, I tried to look, but it was gone. I cannot put my finger on it now. The child has grown, the dream is gone. And I have become comfortably numb.
Well, Well, that was comfortably numb and Dave Gilmour's majestic epic guitar solo, one of the greatest I think ever ever recorded. Well, finally, there was one band whose vocalist had the range and power of all the vocalists you've heard: Daltrey, Joplin, Slick, Neil Young, and the braggadocio and swagger of Jim Morrison and Mick Jagger and Ian Anderson, whose guitarist was the equal and in some ways maybe the superior to Clapton and Hendrix and Gilmour, whose bass player was in the same league as Entwistle and Cassidy and Bill Wyman, and his drummer was probably the best rock drummer there ever has been, better even than Keith Moon. And that band, of course, was Led Zeppelin. And they were founded in 1968, really as the version 3 of the Yardbirds. I don't think I need to introduce them, but to introduce the names, but Robert Plant, Jimmy Page, John Paul Jones and John Bonham comprised Led Zeppelin. This track is from the recently released How the West Was Won triple CD, and the track is Since I've Been Loving You by Page, Plant and Jones.
crying out. Oh, my tears, they fell like rain, rain. Oh, somebody hear the call.
Well, that was Led Zeppelin's Since I've Been Loving You from the compilation, the 3-CD compilation How the West Was Won, released a number of years ago from 1972 performances in LA and Long Beach. I had the enormous pleasure of seeing them in the city of Brisbane in Australia during their only Australian tour of 1972. And as I think I've been quoted as saying a number of times, they were without doubt the best band I ever saw by a long way. I remember they played for 2 hours, took a break, and then played for another 2.5 hours. I think they did Stairway to Heaven as an encore. So that was it was quite a concert, and that was what they did everywhere around the world for much of their career. So those are just some of my personal favourites. Unfortunately, I didn't even get through a whole lot of the other ones I wanted to play, but I got through some of the ones I think that are really just great pieces of music. All from great bands formed in the 60s, many of whose careers continue to this day, and who I think remain famous and revered to this day. So it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it thoroughly. And the next time I appear, it's going to be doing the classical show as well. So goodbye.
Production support for Friday's edition of Just You and Me comes from Pizza X. Pizza X, continuing the tradition of specialty pizzas and service. More information online at pizzax.bloomington.com.